Welcome to Emmaus. My name is Angela, and I'm one of the pastors here. I just want to say welcome, especially if you're a first-time visitor, or for those joining us online, we're so glad you are with us today. If you need a Bible or a notes page, we've got ushers who will hand those out. And I also want to share, there's always something happening here, and we want you to know about what's happening in our community. So we have baskets that are on this side of the row. If you want to grab these baskets and pass them on, they have communication cards, which you can give us your email, you can send us a prayer request, you can ask for information about something that's going on, or you can even ask to meet with one of the pastors. So after you fill that out at some point, there's boxes at the back or right here where you can just put that in. So thanks for being here today. We are in the second week of Advent. Last week, Pastor Nate kicked off our focus for the season. We've been reading the words, like we did this morning, of the prophet Isaiah, and especially his words in chapter 9 of that book. And this season, we are really focusing on hope. We are choosing to place our hope in Jesus. Some of us have done that many times, and we are choosing to do it again. And maybe you're someone who's here this morning who's never made that choice, and I hope that maybe this morning you'll think about what it would be like for you to put your hope in Jesus. So it's December 10th. I'm not even sure how we are at this point of this year. I feel like I say this every year. But somehow we're here, and I'm caught up, like most of us, in the rush to do everything. You know what I mean? You find yourself busy doing things, and then I get so stressed out of doing something, and it's not even, it doesn't even matter. My kids won't even remember or even know that I did it, but somehow I'm caught up in all the things that I feel like I have to do, spending hours on silly things that stress me out. And at the same time, I'm realizing this busyness causes me to be distracted. It causes me to miss the chance that I have to engage, the chance to decide to put my hope in Jesus, the chance to focus on what this is all about. And because of this, I'm really grateful that in this season, we've really slowed down for Advent. We are staying in this one passage. We are looking at these four different names, and I hope that that will be helpful for you as we slow down and just soak in what this season is about. So we're focusing on the names of Jesus mentioned in Isaiah 9:6. Last week, we camped out with the name Wonderful Counselor. Nate talked about why we should place our hope in a God who is the Wonderful Counselor. He gave us some beautiful reasons to trust the guidance that comes from God. And today we're going to spend our time focusing on another piece of that phrase. And the phrase is Mighty God. I know we read it, but I'd like us to read Isaiah 9:6 again. It'll be on the screen. For to us a child is born, to us a son is given, and the government will be on his shoulders, and he will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. So what Isaiah is doing here is essentially announcing the heir to the throne. This is a prophet that is a royal birth announcement that's coming. And it's interesting because this birth announcement comes before the baby's even born, right? It comes before the baby's mother is even born. In fact, it comes 700 years before this baby would be born. That's just what prophets do, I guess. And it's not just a birth announcement, but he's announcing the birth of a future king. And when we frame it this way, I like to imagine there would be trumpets blasting and all this fanfare, because that's what we do when a king is going to be born. But that's really not the way it went down. And in the ancient Near East, the birth of an heir to the throne, it was a big occasion. It was a momentous occasion. It was not uncommon for a king ascending to the throne to also take what they called a throne name. So these names are titles, and this shows how the king would rule and who the king was, okay? So with Isaiah's announcement, the title is prophetic. The title signifies God's intentions for his people, his ultimate intentions. And this title, again, comes before Jesus is even born. So today, we're just going to sit with this phrase, this second part of his throne name, which is Mighty God. And when I knew that I was going to be teaching on this phrase for the last several weeks, I've just been thinking about it. Mighty God. Mighty. Mighty. You know, I'm rolling it over in my head. It's not an unfamiliar phrase. I've grown up in the church. I've sung many songs about it. It's not unusual, but I think because it's so usual, that I've kind of glossed over it, because while this phrase is familiar to me, I'm not sure I've really taken the time to sit with what it means to have a mighty God. And I thought about, what does it mean to me? What does it mean to those around me? And why does it matter to me that my God is mighty? Now, there's a person in my life who thinks a lot about mighty. He thinks a lot about power. He thinks a lot about strength, because we have a 10-year-old son. And I'm constantly reminded how he sees the world and what he values. Benjamin is very impressed by might or strength or power or speed. He talks often about who is stronger, who is bigger, who is faster. It goes on all day long. He will never tire of the lightsaber battles in Star Wars. He loves superhero movies, and he's always drawn to the exciting battle scene. The romance, not so much. But the battle scene is where he lives. That's where he's got his attention. And even on a personal level, he dreams about the day when he will be stronger than his dad. He talks about that often. So in the last couple of years, he has really got into watching football. And it's not surprising to me that he's drawn into this sport, into the battles on the field, the crashing, and the power. And most Friday nights this fall, he's watched one of our local high school teams play. He thinks very highly of a certain linebacker for the 12 Bridges Rhinos, because he is very confident that Nick Ochoa is mighty and he can do anything. And if you seem mighty in my 10-year-old's perspective, you will have his attention, you will have his admiration, and he might even ask you to sign his football. So mighty is a big deal for our 10-year-old boy. And while there's a lot of talk about this, and when we started to think about God and how God is just so much bigger than just my 10-year-old's perspective of mighty, I thought, I'm going to ask my son this week, what does it really mean when it comes to God? What does mighty mean when it comes to God? And he actually surprised me. He said to me, God has a lot of power to rule, and he has the power to create the world, the planets, everything. So I said, okay, so what does it matter to you that God is mighty? And he looked at me and he simply said, because a lot of those things are essential to life. And I thought that was really interesting. It's not where I expected him to go with his usual trajectory. But this idea of being mighty was also reminding me of how essential God's power is to each one of us. In Hebrew, mighty God used here is the phrase El Gibor. Disclaimer, I'm not a Hebrew scholar. I just read people who are. So I will do my best with the pronunciation. But Gibor means a mighty warrior. And it's often used in a military context. It has connotations like valor, or the mightiest, or the champion. In fact, I think we've seen it used several times in the Old Testament. There's a story, most of you probably know this one. It's about David and Goliath. There's this small young boy named David, and he takes on Goliath. And Goliath is the representative of the Philistines, the opposing country. They're at war, and they were sending out their biggest and their best against Israel's small David. And what's interesting is in that story, Gibor is actually used for Goliath. Goliath is their champion. He is their mightiest. So I just thought that was really interesting. And then we also see David had these elect mighty men, and they are called Gibor. They serve David, but they have this warrior-like quality. And then I found it really interesting. I was reading 1 Samuel this week, and it's about the time when Saul is ruling. If you guys remember Saul, he's the first king of Israel. Not a great king. He makes some really bad choices. He is struggling. He is struggling so much that the Spirit of God has left him. And now he's being tormented by an evil spirit. And his servants suggest that what will help is you find someone who can play a lyre to help him. And if you don't know, a lyre is like this mini harp instrument. So they say, find a lyre, it'll help you. And who knew that lyres helped with evil spirits, but you learn. And so anyway, Saul agrees. He says, that's a good idea. And I want you to listen to this response in 1 Samuel 16:18. One of the servants answered, I have seen a son of Jesse of Bethlehem who knows how to play the lyre. He is a brave man and a warrior. He speaks well and is a fine-looking man, and the Lord is with him. So this son of David, spoiler alert, this is, son of Jesse, this is David. he will be the future king. When we talk about the line of David, this is him. This is King David who starts it all. And as I was reading this week, I noticed two things. You know, they call him a brave man, and they actually also use the word gibor, warrior. And it's the same word we're using in Isaiah. And what I found interesting about this was, first of all, David hadn't even fought a battle at this point. David hadn't even had that interaction with Goliath. David is a shepherd boy, and they're already calling him gibor. They're already seeing in him that he's a valiant warrior, a hero, a leader, a champion. So I thought that part was interesting. But the other part that struck me as I read from it this week was it describes him as a brave man and a warrior. And there is so much hope in this. That's great. He's a warrior. He is brave. And while he is powerful and the word gibor is used, the other part of the title that we use in Isaiah is not used. And I think that's really important for us to know. For the prophecy coming from Isaiah and the title of Messiah, the other part, the L, is essential. The other part of that phrase, El, is the name of God, and we've seen it through the Old Testament joined with other words. Sometimes you'll see words like El Shaddai, which means God is all sufficient. And while Gabor can be used for a variety of people, when El is used, it has to be God. It has to be. This child, this son, is God. There's nothing, no way around it. When Isaiah connects this child who we born to this and the son who given to this title, it can only be God. Not like God, not even a really great king or even a great teacher, nothing less than God. And that is who Isaiah announces with this announcement. He's going to come from the line of David, but he's going to be far, far greater than any king before him because he's God. So this is why every part of this name in this passage is vital. We could just stop. If we had just stopped with when Nate talked about Wonderful Counselor, that's great. But if we just leave Wonderful Counselor on its own, it could apply to a lot of people. It could apply to a lot of leaders. And some experts say that if you actually were to read the full translation, it would be this. A Wonderful Counselor is the Mighty God. The Everlasting Father is a Prince of Peace. In fact, some commentaries even suggest that these are not multiple names, but it's just one compound name. All of it. This is who God is. This is who the Messiah is. And for the people of Israel, the idea of God being mighty wouldn't be a surprise. His people would have known these stories well. They knew the mighty God who parted the sea and rescued them from Egypt. They knew the mighty God who toppled the walls of Jericho. They knew the mighty God who had led them to so many unbelievable victories. What I do think would be startling to the Israelites in this prophecy, if they were to actually grasp it fully, would be the idea of an incarnate God. A God who took on human flesh would have been almost unimaginable to some of the Israelites. The thought would be mind-boggling to see a God who is so intent on saving his people, this mighty God who becomes human, who becomes one of them. So we've had a little bit of time to sit with the idea of Jesus becoming one of us. I think it's still stretching, I think, to a lot of us. But today I wonder if because we have sat with that longer, I wonder if we've forgotten or we have stopped appreciating that our God is mighty. And what does that mean to us today, right now? So what does it matter if our God's mighty? So I came up with a few reasons. Because God is mighty, we know he can do all things. We know it. All things. His power has no limits. There is nothing that we cannot give him. As I think about his shoulders that Nate talked about last week and the burdens he can carry with us, it means he can take it all. He can take everything. I think about times where I'm just tempted to hold back or to not give it all to Jesus. But I need to know that my God is mighty and his power works in us and it works through us. And in his might, he became one of us. He is with us in a way that it can only be accomplished through his might and through his choice to be with us. And he does so without sinning. So this God who can do all things has the ultimate power. He embraces weakness through the incarnation to be able to know us, to be able to love us, to be able to understand us, and to save us. He can do it all. Our God is mighty. And another reason, because God is mighty, we know that he is in control and his plan will triumph. His plan will triumph. So I just want to be clear. Jesus did not die on the cross out of defeat. In fact, Jesus might, his power, only intensifies the truth that he gave his life for us. The most powerful being to ever walk on this earth allowed his own death so that we might live. Jesus, who is mighty, God allowed himself to suffer when he didn't have to. He gave himself. He controlled probably a lot of his desire to exit this whole situation. He submitted himself to all of this, despite of his power, despite his strength, to change it, because he could have changed it all. And I think of Christ, and I think about how every step he took as a human. It wasn't just this one decision to die on the cross. It wasn't just this one time where he submitted to being this fragile human being, but every step he took towards the cross, he is submitting. Every time he suffered, he is submitting. Every time he is making a choice to do this, because his plan is rooted in love. He lived on earth for us, and he died for us. And the other reason I thought about, when I thought about because God is mighty, and this one is so linked to my need for hope, is we can be rescued. There are times when I don't think any good is ever going to happen. Have you ever had those moments where you think, it's broken, it's not going to change, nothing will ever get better? I have seen corruption that's led to suffering. I have become apathetic when I feel like nothing I ever do is going to change the world around me. I've been exasperated with broken systems and broken people. And as we consider ideas of might, we can think about what the world paints as might. You know, we have these global examples we see every day. Countries that want to be the mightiest. People struggling to be the one with the power. This idea of might and power seems to be so alluring. This desire to be in control has corrupted countless people. And yet today, as I think about the mighty God, I think about how his might is different. All these human examples don't come close to the power of our God. But I think it's interesting, especially as we look to Jesus, to see what does it look like as the incarnate God to be mighty and to be on earth. And the mighty God uses his might for us. I think that's really important to see. When we look at Jesus' life here, I see what it means to be a mighty God whose very core is love. Does Jesus use his might on earth? Absolutely, absolutely. But if you pay attention and notice that when he does, it's for others, it's not for himself. In Luke chapter 4, there's a passage that talks about the time when Jesus is tempted by the devil. And at one point, the devil says to him, "If you are the Son of God, tell this stone to become bread." And Jesus answered, "It is written, man shall not live on bread alone." So here is Jesus in his humble state. He's human. He is hungry. He's exhausted. Yet here Jesus refuses to use his divine status for self-preservation. Jesus, who is mighty God, will not use that for himself. His power and all who God is about a bigger plan, and he knows it. It's about us. His decision to not turn the stone into bread was not about his lack of ability. It wasn't about his lack of power. In fact, later on, he multiplies loaves and fishes so much that feeds over 5,000 people. He has the might. He has the power. But the difference there is he does it to meet the needs of others. Because that's who Jesus is. The mighty plan, God's mighty plan, is about rescue. But it's not about rescuing himself. It's about rescuing us. Because humanity was in bondage. We were slaves. And we were defeated. There's a writer, J.R.R. Tolkien. You probably are familiar with him. He wrote the Lord of the Rings series. He also wrote a series of letters that were published. And in one of the letters, he says this: "We long for Eden, and we are constantly glimpsing it. Our whole nature is still soaked with a sense of exile." What Tolkien is saying here is that we long for the way it was supposed to be. We long for the way it was made to be, the way we were created to be before sin entered the world. And I think we long for restoration, for total restoration. We long for things to be set right. Yet in the meantime, in our waiting, in our disappointments and in our grief, in our realization of how broken this world is, we can lose sight of hope. We can be overwhelmed and exhausted. And in all of this, we can feel like we're separated and we can feel like we're those exiled people. Discouragement can feel like a disconnection from God. And the darkness of this world can make us feel like people without hope. And that's why, friends, it is vital that we claim the truth that our God is mighty. And we need to hang on to that truth. Our God has the power to rescue us. And that same God is enabling us to place our hope in him and to be part of the restoration. We get to join him in that restoration. I'd like to go back to the Isaiah passage, but this time verse 7. "Of the greatness of his government and peace, there will be no end. He will reign on David's throne and over his kingdom, establishing and upholding it with justice and righteousness. And from that time on and forever, the zeal of the Lord Almighty will accomplish this." The zeal of the Lord Almighty. We could actually replace it with "the intense love of the Lord Almighty will conquer all things." His love will bring a peace that will not end. And his reign will be forever and ever because he will rescue us. His might is for us. And then in some mysterious way, he shares that with us. He shares that power and that might and that strength with us because we have a mighty God who invites us in. He wants to cover us and he wants his might to be for us. El Gibor, mighty God, is the God we can put our hope in. He is the God who can do all things and will fulfill his plan. We can trust him knowing that his might, his power, and his strength is for us. I would like to share some instructions from the Apostle Paul. He has a letter to Ephesus, and just a little piece I wanted to share as we wrap up this teaching today. "Finally, be strong in the Lord and in his mighty power. Put on the full armor of God so that you can take your stand against the devil's schemes. For our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against rulers, against the authorities, against the powers of this dark world, and against spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly realms." This morning, I want to encourage you to be strong in the Lord and in his mighty power. Today, I hope you will choose hope. Our God is mighty.